This is FSN.
Thank you, Ira. Thank you very much. Welcome to Tuesday's Richie Allen Show, the 6th of August 2019. Lovely afternoon here in Salford in Greater Manchester. I hope it's good where you are. I have two very interesting guests lined up for you this Tuesday. You can tweet the programme right now and until the end of it. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Welcome, welcome.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, this hour, I'll be joined by a man called Andy Chambers. Andy will be phoning in from the US, and he's got a very interesting story to tell, a very difficult story to tell about how he came to be separated from his daughter, Belle. Just over a year ago. And I connected to him because he was chatting with listeners of this programme on Twitter. And I had a bit of a conversation with him earlier this morning. And I understand that he's been speaking to independent media outlets in the United States trying to tell his story. But as of yet, no mainstream news outlet or no commercial news outlet wants to talk to him. But it's a very, very important and a very interesting story. And it's something we're very interested in here in the UK, and that is forced adoption. So Andy Chambers joins us this hour to tell us his story. You don't want to miss that. And coming up in the second hour of the programme, an old friend, Dean Henderson, returns to the show. Dean's got a brand new book out. It's called Nephilim Crown 5G Apocalypse. That's Nephilim Crown 5G Apocalypse. I've been reading the book over the last few days. It is hugely interesting. And we'll get into it with Dean in the second hour of the programme. And as usual, while Dean is on the show, if there's something you'd like me to put to him, you can do so through the medium of Twitter. All right, so I look forward to that. Coming up for 5 minutes past the hour. Yes, it is Tuesday's programme. Let's move, just jump straight in to the news roundup, because there's not a lot of time today. We're packed today. Michael Gove is a cabinet minister, Boris Johnson's man, responsible for planning for no deal. And he's been speaking this afternoon, and Gove says the European Union seems to be refusing to negotiate with the UK over any new Brexit deal. Gove said he was deeply saddened that Brussels was saying, no, we don't want to talk. This comes after the European Union said that UK demands to remove the Irish backstop from May's deal, that's Theresa May's deal, were unacceptable. The Irish Prime Minister, useless idiot that he is, Leo Varadkar, has reiterated that the withdrawal deal, including the backstop, cannot be renegotiated. So is the country heading for October 31st with the real possibility of leaving with no deal, as it should have done 3 years ago? No, I don't believe. But anyway, we'll park that. As you heard Iris Spitzer say in the news, a group of politicians has begun a legal action which aims to prevent Johnson shutting down Parliament to force through his no-deal Brexit. And you might be aware that Gina Miller is going back to court as well to try and prevent that. In the meantime, here's Michael Gove speaking to an assembly of journalists today.
I'm deeply saddened that the EU now seem to be refusing to negotiate with the UK. The Prime Minister's been clear. He wants to negotiate a good deal with the European Union, and he will apply all the energy of the government and ensure that in a spirit of friendliness, we can negotiate a new deal. But one thing is clear. The old deal that was negotiated has failed to pass the House of Commons 3 times now, so we do need a new approach. And whatever happens, while we remain ready and willing to negotiate, the EU must appreciate that we're leaving on October the 31st, deal or no deal.
Yeah. Going nowhere. One way or another, the UK is not going to leave the European Union with no deal. With no deal whatsoever. It's not going to happen. Mark my words, there'll be an election before that happens. These next few weeks will be very interesting. It can't be allowed to happen. Let's move on. Former US President Barack Obama, who dropped more bombs than his predecessor George W. Bush, has called on all Americans, I call on all Americans, to reject language from any of your leaders that feeds into hatred or normalizes racism, says Obama. He didn't name anyone, but you don't have to be Alfred Einstein. I love that old gag. To know that he meant Donald Trump, of course. He meant Donald. In a speech on Monday, Trump condemned hatred and white supremacy. You heard that on this programme yesterday. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine. How do you pronounce that? D-E-W-I-N-E. Is it Divine? The hard W, is it Divine? Or DeWine? Anyway, Mike DeWine, Ohio Governor, he is taking action. Here he is. Go on, Mike. Mike! 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 Let's try that again. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine.
Some chanted, do something. And they were absolutely right. We must do something. And that is exactly what we are going to do. I'm asking the General Assembly to pass a law that requires background checks for all firearm sales in the state of Ohio, with the exception for gifts between family members and certain other limited uses.
Mike DeWine there. Obviously, gun enthusiasts, let's be fair to everybody, are not happy with that. That's going to run and run. We'll talk more about that. Maybe with Dean Henderson briefly in the second hour. Wait for this. Wait for it. You've no choice, I suppose, but to wait for it. Gender stereotypes are harming the environment. Now, who's saying this? Well, a journalist writing for Pink News. Pink News is a digital news agency for LGBTQ plus persons. And they reckon gender stereotypes are hurting the environment. Here's the headline from the article. Straight men don't reuse plastic bags for fear of looking gay, say researchers.
What kind of fuckery is this?
It's all true. I'm a red-blooded, meat-eating, spit and sawdust, tobacco-chewing, white male baldy gammon, and I don't use reusable plastic bags. I don't use those bags for life. I won't, because I'm afraid that I look a bit on the gay side, apparently. This is the madness we are subjected to on a daily basis. Straight men will avoid reusable plastic bags and other environmentally friendly efforts because of harmful gender stereotypes, because it doesn't make us feel manly. So when I go to the counter at Sainsbury's or Tesco or Lidl or any of the others, and they say to me, do you need a bag, sir? I say, yes, 6 or 7 plastic bags, please. The 5p ones. Would you like one of these, sir, these reusable? Fuck off. No. What do you think I am? Gay? Gay? What do you think I am? Gay? Me? Gay? Researchers found that certain attempts to be more environmentally conscious are often perceived as either masculine or feminine. What a load of Horlicks. Janet K. Swin from Pennsylvania State University. She's a psychologist, said that some men might be put off behaving in an eco-friendly way because of these stereotypes. Yes, only gay people care about the environment, therefore I must not care about the environment, or at least it must not be seen that I care about the environment. It must not seem like I do. I don't want anybody thinking that I'm gay. Piss. What utter piss. Pish, they would say in Glasgow. Pish. Lots of LGBTQ plus stuff today. Transgender woman to stand for the Brexit Party. The Brexit Party is putting forward a transgender woman in Lincolnshire to fight the next general election. Her name is Jessica Swift. She's 52, a proud transgender woman, and has been chosen to stand in Lincolnshire at the general election, which might be very soon. Jessica is passionate about education and wants to change lives. And as a proud trans woman, she will always fight for equality and the rights of all groups in society. That's Jessica. There you go. You go, girl. Nigel Farage is very woke, isn't he? Very woke. We'll be the first party to have a transgender MP. Yes. And in the next story in our LGBTQ plus whatever the hell roundup, Victoria's Secret has hired a transgender model for the first time in its history. And Ed Razek has resigned. He was the chief marketing officer at Victoria's Secret. He's resigned because last year he said transsexual models shouldn't be cast because the show itself is a fantasy. And men don't fantasize about trans women or women or men who identify as women. So he's absolutely keeling over with shock and dismay that a trans woman called Valentina Sampaio, 22-year-old Brazilian, has been hired by Victoria's Secret. Ed Razek is pissed right off, through ties, right out of the pram, and has resigned from the company on a point of principle. On Sky News this afternoon, Kay Burley interviewed a trans man. Now, a trans man is a woman or a person who was born female but identifies as male. And in this case, Kay interviewed Jake Graff. Jake is an actor, and Jake was born female but identified as a male early on. So, Jake Graff, what do you think of Victoria's Secret hiring the transgender model, says Kay Burley? What says Jake Graff?
I think it's about time too. I think it's long overdue. Obviously, there are more and more trans people out there visible in the media, and to have someone working for Victoria's Secret or working hired by Victoria's Secret, I think, you know, considering the company's been going since 1977, I think that should have happened some time ago. But at least they're finally getting on board.
Indeed. So, I mean, they have been criticised many times in the past for, you know, not having plus size models and the like. It does look as though they're finally getting with the programme. Do you think there'll be much of a backlash, and how do you think that they should deal with that?
It looks like they're finally getting with the programme, says Kay Burley. You've got to pay attention to the language. By the way, my tongue today, this is no joke, my tongue is incredibly swollen on the right-hand side. I have an infection or something. I've got a really swollen tongue and I'm going to slur my words, or I'm going to trip up over my words and sentences on occasion during this particular programme. No, I haven't had a drink. I've never in my life had a drink before work, but I've got this horrible... I think I bit it by accident. And I might have bitten it by accident at the back. Jesus, this proper sore. But it's swollen now and it's causing me problems. I hope it doesn't swell any further. So anyway, they got with the programme, says Kay. That's very revealing because, yes, there is a programme. So have they got with the programme? What's going on? Will there be a backlash? What does Jake Graff, the trans man, say?
I mean, if people didn't do things because there was going to be a backlash, then we'd all be fairly stagnant. Things are moving on. And, you know, there are more and more trans people doing amazing things, not just in the media, but just everyday life. People are realizing more and more that trans people aren't any different to anyone else, that we're just as capable of doing everything that anyone else can do. And there will be backlash because there's backlash to everything, because there are some very, very bored, lonely people out there who like to, you know, kick back against anything that ruffles their feathers or makes them think that the good old days of bigotry and lack of inclusion, you know, was something to hold on to.
Lack of inclusion, bigotry. So there's some bored, lonely people out there who will backlash against the appointment of the trans woman because they're bored, they're lonely, and they're bigots. Or maybe they are very particular about, for them, what constitutes a female. And a female does not have a cock, nor does a female have balls. There's nothing bored or lonely about that, or bigoted about it. So maybe those who criticise Victoria's Secret today, particularly feminists, might have a point. You know, it's not because they're bored or lonely or bigoted. It's got nothing to do with inclusivity. It's ludicrous is what it is. Jake Graff, ludicrous. What else does Jake say?
I think if companies didn't do that just because they're worried about offending, then obviously we'd all be stuck in the dark ages.
Has there been a tipping point over the last few years? I don't know. What's happened for it to become acceptable for Victoria's Secret to say, yeah, we've got our first transgender model? Can you put your finger on it?
Lots has happened in the last 5 years. I mean, I've seen an incredible amount of change from Laverne Cox, who was, you know, started off in Orange Is the New Black, being the first ever transgender woman, but also transgender woman of color, which was particularly historic, to grace the cover of Time magazine. We've seen trans people in the media coming out more and more. Recently, my wife, Captain Hannah Winterbourne, was awarded an MBE by Prince William for her work as the transgender champion of the British Army. So, you know, globally, we've seen a lot more people. India Moore, who is a trans model in the US, was on the cover of Elle quite recently.
Brilliant.
So it's kind of been, you know, sort of slow trickle of trans people finally feeling that they can be safe and can be open and can be out and proud.
Out and proud.
That visibility has just encouraged more trans people to sort of out themselves and to you know, really show themselves. And I think what it is just more and more of us being out there and being able to live authentically. And I think it's a great thing. It's very, very exciting. And hopefully it will give hope and visibility to the young generation and make them feel like they're not as alone as I felt when I was growing up.
Jake Graff there. And then Graff says that it is nonsense to suggest that men do not fancy trans women.
This nonsense last year that people don't fantasize about trans women. People have always fantasized about trans women because they are just women, and people fantasize about different...
But they're not women, though. But they're not women. This is the thing. And men have not always fantasized about trans women because they're not women. Most men fantasize about a woman, and they fantasize about the parts of a woman that make her uniquely a woman. Let's be honest about
different
it.
People. And, you know, I think we're moving forward. There is huge stigma still attached to, sadly, dating trans people, to being attracted to trans people. I think
because most straight men are not attracted to trans people. You couldn't be. If you're a straight guy, you cannot be attracted to, if you're straight, that is, to somebody with male genitalia, irrespective of how they've done their hair or how they have grown their breasts. These are the facts of life, you see.
I think hopefully we're going to get to a day when you'll see big film stars walking down red carpets holding the hand of their trans partners. But we're a way off that.
We are we? I hope so. Then a little bit about himself then.
Hopefully more and more people will meet someone trans and will realise that we're not to be feared and that we are really just the same as anyone else out there. We're just, you know, we've just had a... We were born, particularly in my case, you know, I can only speak from my own experience, just feeling in a body that didn't quite align with my head and my brain and who I felt myself to be. And that's really largely one of the only things that sort of separates us from everyone else.
You can't be born in the wrong body. By the way, this Jake Graff, who was born female but identifies as male, married somebody called Hannah Winterbourne, who was born male but identifies as female. So it's two trans people married. That's fine, no problem. Winterbourne is an engineer in the British Army and is the highest ranking transgender officer. The couple want to have children and will do so through surrogacy. Yeah. All right, 21 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show for Tuesday, August 6th, 2019. Music from Daft Punk. Oh, this was big. Oh, this was big the last year we were in Spain. Oh, sure, it was big the last year we were in Spain. This is the sound of the summer on the Richie Allen Show, Europe's most listened to independent radio show, broadcasting in Salford and Greater Manchester. My name is Richie Allen. Bet you knew that. Nice to be with you. Back in a couple of minutes with my first guest. He's got an incredible story to tell. Andy Chambers joins me in a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere. That is Daft Punk and Get Lucky on The Richie Allen Show. The time is exactly 23 and a half minutes past the hour. Let's welcome our first guest to the programme. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we got in touch with one another through listeners of this programme who came across his Twitter account where he was telling his story. He's very difficult and kind of heart-wrenching story about what's been happening to him in the last couple of years. You know, this programme deals with forced adoption and state intervention in the family home. We deal with it all the time and it's not good. And in this country, it happens to thousands of families a year. The state will intervene, sometimes justifiably, when the child needs to be taken out of the home for the child's protection, but most of the time for no good reason at all. It is £1 billion a year industry in the UK. We get into this all the time. My guest this hour, well, his life changed dramatically in the last couple of years. Back in 2014, he moved out of the house that he shared with his girlfriend at the time. They had a daughter together. He couldn't take the fact that she was unfaithful to him, his former girlfriend. So their daughter went to live with his ex-girlfriend's mother. and the ex-girlfriend moved right across the country to live with a new partner. Now, my guest fought pretty hard and won custody of his daughter. She was returned to him. And for the next few years then, up until 2018, and up until last year, they were together and they were getting on fine. But everything changed in the last 12 months. I want to welcome to the programme, live from Vicksburg in Mississippi. Let's welcome Andy Chambers to the show. Andy, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. How are you?
Well, good morning to you. I sure appreciate you having me on.
No, it's a pleasure to have you on. I'm sorry to be talking to you under these circumstances, Andy. I mentioned that you'd been with your daughter for 4 years, you'd won custody of her, and you moved to Vicksburg in Mississippi because there was a job there for you, some work. And it's really at that point that things began to change and you encountered some difficulties. Do you want to pick the story up from that point when you came to work in an old building in Vicksburg? Go ahead, Andy.
Sure, yeah. I was going to move back out west. I have a lot more people out west that I know, so I figured I'd move back out west. Kind of offered this temporary job to help remodel a building. Decided I'd stop off there and make that money real quick so I'd have an easier time getting started back out where I was going. I was supposed to be here anywhere from 3 weeks to a month and a half. We weren't really sure, but it wasn't going to be any longer than that. And so I got here. I put Belle in school. I've always had problems with CPS. I've been dealing with these. I've dealt with them literally a dozen times in three different states. All of the calls apparently originating from my daughter's mother. Every time we'd get in a fight or an argument, I could expect them within days. It was the only avenue she had to attack me. And they had never been a problem. You know, they're irritating, but, you know, if you just deal with them and show them your daughter, here she is, look at her, talk to her, whatever. They can't find a problem, so they go away. Well, I got here to Vicksburg, and I guess it was time for another visit. So the lady shows up at the house, and she demands entry. Now, I'm a big constitutionalist, and I think that the first person that has a responsibility to stand up for your rights is you. So when they would show up and demand entry, they're showing up as a representative of the government. And representative of the government needs a warrant. Plain and simple. That's the end of the discussion. There are no extenuating circumstances that make that any different. You're from the government. Go get a warrant. Well, none of them ever liked that, but they always just kind of rolled their eyes and went away. She swore up and down to take her 15 minutes to get this warrant. I said, okay, well, I'll see you in 15 minutes then. She got real mad that first time, peeled out of the driveway. It was obvious that I had made an enemy right from the start. Then she's coming back every couple of days for the next couple of weeks. And she's bringing cops with her, and then she's bringing sheriff's deputies with her, and then she's coming back with the cops again, and just demanding and demanding. She just would not go get the warrant. And so finally, the last time she came with the sheriff's deputies, they pulled her off to the side about 10 feet away from me where I could plainly hear them. And they said, look, you know, don't call us again to come over here and harass this guy. That's not what we're here for. Get the warrant or leave him alone. It's just that simple.
That's good.
And she got really, really mad, and she came back over there and got in my face and told me if I didn't do what she said, she was going to take my kid away. And I said, yeah, look, I haven't done anything wrong. I don't think you can just do that. So, you know, just go get the warrant and stop doing this.
Andy, what did she want? What was her purpose for the visit? Did she want to determine that Belle was healthy and was well? Is that why she wanted access?
I let her speak to Belle. Hell, after the third time she came to visit, or the second time she came to visit, the next day I went and pulled Belle out of school early and took her to the CPS office, asked for a supervisor, and took Belle in the supervisor's office and said, look, here she is. Deal with her. You know, but y'all can't come in my house without a warrant. If that's what it is, then get the warrant. I'll be happy to show you into the house, and you can come in, you can look around for whatever. But look, here she is, you know, she's happy, she's healthy. She's not afraid of me a bit, ain't a bit of fear for me and that child. And, you know, there's obviously nothing wrong here.
And she was doing well. You know, she was doing well in school, Andy. I'm assuming her teachers were happy with her and her appearance and that she was doing okay. So the school wasn't concerned. Everybody was happy.
No, I wouldn't have any. I wouldn't have any problems with anybody else. This was mom calling and starting nonsense. You can't find out who called. That's one of the parts of this, at least here in America, is you don't get to know who it is that called on you. You don't get to know who made the complaint, and half the time you don't even get to know what the complaint is.
Yeah.
But I finally got it out of them what the complaint was, and it was that I didn't have anything in the house to eat except ramen noodles. I said, okay, yeah, you know, I hear you. That's a somewhat of a valid thing to complain about. I mean, ramen noodles, that is still food. What if I had a lot of ramen noodles?
Right.
You know, but it's moving past all that. And I asked her this because I already knew what the answer was, and I was waiting on her to say it. I said, well, what's the address that you're given? She told me what the address was. Like, sweetheart, I hadn't lived in that house in 4 months. You know, I moved out of that house quite a while ago. What are we talking about? But she didn't care about that. She wanted to come in my new house and look around. And I was, you know, I was fine with it. I didn't have anything to hide. I actually wished she would just go get the warrant so I could let her in. I wanted this to be over. I wasn't trying to play games with her, but she wouldn't do it. And I was not going to back down off of it because this is my right as a U.S. citizen.
You believe
before you come in my house,
you have to have a warrant. You believe it's a civil right, Andy. It's my civil right that if an agent of the state wants to enter my property, they must present a warrant signed by a judge. And you are adamant about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we don't stand up for these values, they go away. They're not just the way it is in the world. They are the way it is as long as we're willing to maintain those principles.
Stand up for us.
Yeah. And, so, I mean, it was just really that simple. And she was mad. She got very mad that I would not kowtow to her authority. Everybody that was involved in this case for the entire rest of the thing told me that, you know, they were all, it's real obvious what this is. You didn't do anything wrong. You upset this lady. You ruffled her feathers. Like, okay, and then her response was to destroy my family. Seems a bit
before,
you know,
Andy. Before
a whole lot of balance.
No,
there.
Before we talk about what happened next, which is shocking, let me ask you: did you speak with Belle's mother? Did you phone her up and ask what's happening here? Why is this happening? Did you try and find out why? First of all, if it was her making the phone calls and why she was doing it, did you contact her?
Not by this point that we're at in the story, because I assumed it was her, and I also kind of thought this was going to end like it had every other. You know, maybe they might harass me for a little bit, because, you know, it was a different experience with all of them. Some of them would show up one time, sit there for 20 minutes and go, I don't see a problem here, and leave.
Yeah.
And some of them would kind of come back over and over. They really wanted, I really need to get in your house. Okay, well, then you really need to get the warrant. I don't think there's anything wrong here, so I'm not going to fool with the warrant. But none of them ever even tried to get a warrant. Every other one that I've ever run into, which, like I said, would be a dozen or so, it was all plainly obvious to them that there was nothing wrong here. But this one special one here in Vicksburg, she saw through and, you know, saw the abuse or whatever, which by the end of this story will still never be quantified in any way. It never was in court.
Before we get to Andy, before we get to that, our guest, folks on the line from Vicksburg in Mississippi, this is a really important story because it's the one we've heard similar stories here in the UK. We've covered this. This is Andy Chambers, and we've heard from Andy about how his ex-girlfriend moved away, leaving their daughter with her mother. She went across the country to be with another man. Andy eventually got custody of young Belle, and he's living with Belle 4 years. There are some occasional contacts from Child Protective Services, but they're happy that Andy is doing a good job as a single dad and he's doing well with young Belle. But things changed a year or so ago. Why do you think she kept contacting CPS? And Andy, was it because, I mean, my listeners will expect me to ask you, were you denying her access to Belle? Were you preventing her from seeing Belle? Why did she get so mad?
No, there was no access for her for Belle, but that was not my fault. My response, anytime she ever said, now, first of all, I actually showed text records and call records in court to prove just how very little contact this woman even tried to have with this child. I'm talking maybe a phone call every 6 months, never a birthday present, never a Christmas present, half the time not even a call on her birthday or Christmas. She might remember 3 days after her birthday and call her. But, you know, no consistent calling, no consistent nothing. A lot of people that I tell this story to, I sum up the whole her mother having contact with a thing like this. And a lot of people seems to strike the right chord. I had this child for 4 years without her making any effort to come see her at all. She never once asked me if I would send her a picture of her. Not one time. That always really struck me as odd. If your kid was somewhere else and you didn't get to see them for any kind of extended period of time, and the person that they were with, you knew was perfectly willing to send you a picture if you asked for it, or however many pictures you wanted, wouldn't you ask for one?
And Andy, do you swear, because we've only met today, you strike me as a nice guy, I'm a nice guy, do you swear that if Belle's mom wanted to spend time with Belle, can you honestly say, and I'm asking you this, I'm not judging you, that you would have accommodated that? Would you have made sure?
I wouldn't have liked it. I was glad this woman was out of our lives. But this, you know, that's not my decision to make. This child isn't just mine. This child is hers.
Yeah.
Now, if you really want me to expand on that, I didn't know exactly how that would work. I was actually quite terrified.
You mightn't get her back.
If she showed up, she could just pick her up and walk off. And what am I going to do? This is Mississippi.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a single father. She's the mother. This is Mississippi. We got old world thinking down here. I'm nobody. I'm a wallet.
So if,
you know, that's what I am in the state of Mississippi, is a wallet.
So if Belle's mom, a wallet, right? So if Belle's mom had turned up, her mom had turned up, you feared that she might decide to take Belle. You were terrified of that. Okay. Well, you're very
so
honest.
Terrified
honest
of that I actually went to the police department a couple of times and asked them, you know, look, are there ways, if this ever happened, could I bring Belle up here and drop her off with y'all? And then, you know, her mother can come in here and see her, and y'all can make sure I brought her, I leave with her. And they were like, yeah, nah, I mean, we understand where you're coming from, but we just can't. We don't have anything in our policy that allows us to do that. So now I'm trying to figure out a way to make this work in a way that I would feel comfortable and safe with it. And she could see Belle if she wanted to. But it just so happened that she never even made any attempt. I mean, she'd call me every, you know, like I said, every 6 months or so. And she might say, well, I want to see my daughter. And I'd say, okay, well, let me know what you're thinking as far as a plan. You know, because we live, you know, 12 and a half hours apart from each other now. So let me know what you're thinking as far as a plan, when you think you want to do this. I'll figure out what arrangements I need to make this happen, to make it safe and comfortable for everybody. And we'll move from there. And then, you know, that was in February, and now it's July and I haven't heard from her again. And she calls back sometime in August. Well, I want to see my child. All right. Well, same thing as last time. Tell me what you're thinking. Make some arrangements.
So you wanted a clear plan, because you had a concern at the back of your mind that you might lose Belle. Andy, let's move on to last year when things went very bad, because we talked about the CPS woman who kept coming back over and over again. At one point, the local sheriff said to the CPS woman, we are not here to harass this man, Andy. Either get a warrant or leave him alone. And then, after a three-day weekend, you dropped Belle off to school like you ordinarily would on a Tuesday morning. I would imagine it was a normal morning. You dropped Belle off to school and you came back to the house. And I don't want to be sensational about this, but I'm guessing your whole world fell apart, because you come back home, you've dropped Belle off to school, and the CPS woman turns up again. What happened then?
Well, I was gathering up. I had to be at work shortly thereafter, so I was kind of gathering up, having me a couple minutes to myself before I had to go, drinking my coffee, and get a knock at the door, and I knew it was her. Nobody else knocks on my door. This is her. So I get up, and I go answer the door, and I actually open the door. I remember being excited, like, oh, man, she's back today. Surely she's got the warrant. Surely she's got this warrant, and we can just stop this. This is beyond old. So I opened the door. I said, hey, did you get the warrant? She said, no. We went up to the school, and we took your child into custody. I said, well, that's horrible. Why would you do that? And she gives me this big old grin. I mean, it really was. It was awful. Gives me a big old grin right in my face and tells me, oh, yeah, I agree. Oh, it's horrible. Like, man. So she hands this paperwork, says I had to be at court 9 o'clock the next morning for a hearing to determine if I get Belle back or if they get to keep her. So I went on to work, talked to my boss, got to take tomorrow off now. Got up the next morning, went to court. My pastor called up a friend of his that's an attorney. And he agreed to come and help me out with this one hearing for free. Because this is just going to be an in-and-out thing. He didn't do anything wrong. So this is just going to be, yeah, we're just going to go in there and be like, yeah, it's a big misunderstanding. Just give his kid back. We'll be on our way. So he didn't even make me pay him for it. It was really, really nice of him. And we get up there and we sit down in court. Judge looks over at the CPS woman. He says, all right, now, why'd you take his kid? And she said, on the record, because he was uncooperative. Now, that immediately struck me as strange because I had spent the entire night before looking up what are the conditions under which they can take your child. And in doing so, I saw all the conditions that are specifically spelled out that they can't. And top of the list on every one of them, I'm talking CPS's policy, this particular courtroom's rules, the state laws that govern these, and the uniform court rules for all of the courts in Mississippi, that's number one. You cannot take someone's child because they are uncooperative. But that's what she said. So the judge looks over at me and he says, okay, now what does that mean? And I said, look, I just wanted a warrant. That was it. I wanted you to have to sign off on this before she was allowed to just walk into my house. Because, you know, he is the judge. She would have gotten that warrant from. He takes his glasses off, and he's visibly mad at her, not me. And he looks over at me and said, look, Mr. Chambers, I'm really sorry about this. We're going to get this straightened out for you. It's a bit of a process. It's going to take a couple of days. We're going to get your little girl back to you. I'm sorry about this, but you are dismissed.
Brilliant. Well, that's a great result for you. You think, fantastic. He's seen through it, and I'll get Belle back.
Well, right. I wanted my child right now. I mean, I don't know where she is. I don't know where she is. I don't know who she's with. None of that information is your business when they've done this to you. You're not allowed to know those things. So, I mean, it was a big lift off my chest. But I still, you know, okay, well, how many days? What are we talking about here? I want my baby back. I don't know where she is. This is... it's horrifying not knowing where your child is and who your child's with. Is she okay? How many times has she yelled for you? Is she crying right now wondering where you are? You know, stuff like that will drive you nuts. But so me and the pastor and the attorney, we walk out in the parking lot, and we're all three leaned up on my car, and they're trying to calm me down. You know, look, that went really well. This is gonna work out just fine. And the door of the courtroom opens again, the courthouse. Now, I don't know how things work over there, but over here, the part that I'm about to tell you is actually a humongous court no-no. We are outside the building. We are gone, essentially. I could have, at any point, you know, before this, hopped in my car and driven off. Somebody sticks a hit up court. You know, judge wants to see you. So I go running back in there thinking, you know, my first thought is, okay, well, he worked something out and they're going to go ahead and give it back to bed. This is awesome. I go walking in there and I sit down and he starts screaming at me that he just got a report that I ran around my daughter's school at some unnamed time in the past. He couldn't even tell me when. There were no details to this, you know, because it didn't happen. But that I was running around the school, waving my arms and running through the hallways, screaming, hollering, acting like a madman, scaring everybody, screaming, "I love Hitler. Hitler is great." And, you know, of course, my jaw hits the table in front of me. You know, what in God's name is happening now? And he's, you know, "Well, what's your problem?" I'm like, "Well, I'm shocked to hear this, man. I don't know what you're talking about." He's like, "Well, I'm shocked to hear it, too." And he turns around, issues new orders, restraining order between me and my daughter. I have to undergo psychological evaluation at my own expense. I have to have a couple of meetings with the very CPS woman who did this to me. I have to now go sit in her office and beg her favor or whatever. On and on, a couple of orders. And then he didn't even set a future court date. Just, you know, "We're dismissed. We'll meet back some point in the future."
Right. Let's go over that again. Let's just go over that again, right? Let me just rehash that. So, Andy, you're in the parking lot with the pastor and with your legal assistant, and you're happy. This is great. It's going to work out. We're going to get Bell back. Then you're called back into the court, and the judge says, "I have new evidence. I have a report that
now,
you
stop right there. That is called ex parte.
That's right.
At least in America.
Yes. It's the same here.
Yeah. You are not allowed to present new evidence while the person is out of the courtroom.
That's right.
Big no no.
It means ex parte means a legal proceeding brought by one person or one party against another without the representation of the other party or without them being notified. It's a terrible thing. So you go back in and the judge says, "Right, we've got a problem. We have a report here of you running around your daughter's school, screaming like a Nazi, saying that you love Hitler and Hitler is great and all the rest of it. This is crazy." This is obviously crazy to me, because if that was true, the CPS woman would previously have found it very easy to get a warrant against you. Very easy.
She would have said that instead of "he was uncooperative."
And there would have been some evidence. The school itself would have reported it. The police would have been called.
Yeah.
The
schools around here, the public schools in this area, each have their own little police force, you know, four or five officers. And that is, you know, their security.
Yeah.
According to what he was saying, the security, which would be a real police force, had to tackle me and subdue me, and then they escorted me off campus. Now, does that sound right to you?
No, it doesn't. No, because somebody would have called the police, charges would have been pressed, and you'd have had a visit. And did you?
I'd have been to jail.
You'd have gone to jail.
Plain and simple.
So did you say this to the judge? Did you say, "Judge, this is madness. There's no evidence of this. It never happened."
I can count on one hand how many times in the entire 5 months that they drug me into that court over and over that I was actually allowed to speak at all.
No way.
It was 4 times. I was allowed to speak 4 times.
So this was like...
And 2 of them have already happened. One was, "Why did she take your kid? You know, what does that mean?" And the other one was, "What's your problem?" When I said, "I'm shocked to hear this." To this story, I will be allowed to speak 2 more times through this entire thing.
They told you then that you could have supervised visits with Bell, right?
No.
They didn't?
Mm-mm. No, I wasn't allowed supervised visits until the psychological evaluation came back, and those are $650 a piece.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't have that right then. It took me a good week and a half to get that money up. And then it takes another, you know, week or so till it goes to the judge. So I don't think the restraining order got lifted until the 1st of April. This was February 22nd was the day she was taken. February 23rd is when, you know, I'm running around screaming Hitler.
This year, yeah.
But her birthday,
2018.
But her birthday is March 19th. Now, the way this whole thing works is they assign a guardian ad litem, to your child. And this basically boils down to your child's attorney, your child's representative in court. And I called and begged him every day. I mean, I really bothered him to no end. You know, look, man, she's got to be scared. She has no idea what's going on. This has got to be terrible for her. Please, can you make me able to see her on her birthday at least? He never even gave me a yes or no answer. I'll try. And I really thought it wasn't going to happen. And then on March 19th, on her birthday, like 1:30 in the afternoon, I get a call saying, if you can drive up here right now, I'll give you 30 minutes with her. So I drove up there and I got to see her on her birthday. And I asked him, you know, was the restraining order still in place? He said, yeah, but as the guardian ad litem, I am able to override that if I deem it necessary. He said, you know, you really wanted to see her on her birthday, and I wanted to watch the two of you together and see what your dynamic is. And I said, okay, well, what is it? He's like, man, she's not scared of you at all. And I said, yeah, no, she's not at all. Like, I don't even spank her. I had a heavy-handed mother and grandparents who didn't do any kind of physical, you know, corporal punishment. And I learned real quick that I was not afraid of my mom whipping me, but I was terrified of Dede and Don being disappointed. So I figured, you know, if that worked that well on me, maybe it'll work that well on her. So that's the way I did it. Like, yeah, the child was not, she was not at all scared of me. And he saw that. And, you know, every bit of this, I'm always thinking, all right, well, this will help, you know, a little bit more of something in my direction. But this is about money. You know, this is, Belle's not a child. And I'm not a father. This isn't a family they're messing up. This Belle's a product. Belle's merchandise. And, you know, it became increasingly obvious to this whole thing, and even more obvious to me now since I've, you know, spent the last year and a half looking a whole lot into these people.
Explain that, Andy, for our listeners. Let me remind our listeners, Andy Chambers is live on the line from Mississippi. And thanks, Andy, for sharing this with our audience, We're very interested in it. And
appreciate you letting me tell it.
Well, it's not because we like to stand and look at car crashes. It's not because of that. Mm-hmm. It's because it's important that people hear.
That's the same reason why I'm out talking about it. I mean, it's hard for me to talk about, but
yeah.
Okay, there are 440,000 children right now in the custody of CPS, right this very second.
Nearly
in the United States of America. 440,000. That's almost 500,000. That's insanity. And now where the financial aspect comes into this, all right, they took my child on February 22nd. So that means that on, you know, I'm probably not going to be right with when these dates exactly happen, but this is the rough gist of how it works. They now have a child in their custody for some portion of February, $4,000. Now that won't show up, you know, because it was February 22nd. So that won't show up in February. That'll show up in March with the payment for March. So on, say, March 1st, the office here got a check for $8,000 for the months of February and March. That is, you know, to pay a couple of $100 of that for that month to the foster home that they put her in. Got to pay the worker that took her. I've understood that they get bonuses, but I'm not going to say that I absolutely know that. It's just, it really does seem like they get a bonus for every kid they take. So that's, you know, February and March. In March, they got $8,000 for February and March. April rolls around, $4,000 for April. Except in April, they got $6,000 because by April, they had put my child on medication. And if they can get them on some kind of medication, doesn't matter what it is, doesn't matter whether they need it or not, if they can get them on medication, that's an extra $2,000. Now, I'm in a lot of support groups. We have a lot of support groups for victims of CPS. You know, literally, thousands of us. Some got stories more horrible than mine. I mean, mine's one of the crazier ones.
Yours is crazy.
You know, and ridiculousness. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of us. And almost all of them are like, yeah, they put my kid on medication too. And we all have a similar follow-up to that. And they can't tell, or they won't tell me what it is. They have my child on medication, taking pills every day for months. It's none of my business what it is. And they did that, you know, so that they get an extra $2,000 a month. There was nothing wrong with my baby. She's perfectly healthy, like really, really healthy. But, you know, this is a money-making scheme.
It's scary.
I mean, I don't know what the problem is over there, but you and your listeners
thing.
Might not be aware of this, but it's absolutely true. And you can look it up and you can call them. And if you back them into a corner, they will admit it to you. I've gotten them to do it before. CPS is a private company. This is not a government agency.
No.
This place is no more government than McDonald's or Wendy's. They are a private company with a profit motive.
The adoption agencies here, Andy, the story here in the UK is eerily similar to the one you've just told. It is a £1 billion a year industry. And we both know that some children need to be protected because they've got very bad parents. But the vast but the vast majority of children are taken here because of something called risk of future emotional harm. This is so crazy.
Oh, there's
people
a push
can't
for that over
that.
Here now. That,
yeah.
that exact words. Yeah.
Crazy. It's yeah. It's sickening.
That's,
it's disgusting.
That's horrifying. What they say over here is what they eventually said with my child, which they didn't actually get to pin this on me because they, you know, I've hired enough lawyers that I finally made them, you know, just throw a Hail Mary. But the charge they give you over here when they can't think of what to accuse you of is quote unquote abuse or neglect. And I did a lot of thinking about what that meant. And I came up with an answer. It means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. Those are not descriptions of actions. You know, if you walk out the door and then you come back a couple hours later and I say, well, what happened to you today? And you say, well, I ran into this guy and he abused me. The first thing any reasonable person's going to ask is, what did he do?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he abused me doesn't mean anything. And abused or neglected. It doesn't say abused and neglected. It doesn't say abused and then maybe some people get neglected instead. It is abused or neglected. So which one is it?
Deliberately vague, Andy. You think it's deliberately vague. It's kind of like a catch-all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I mean, this whole thing, you know, I'm going into this thinking, well, this is a courtroom. This is a court. It's going to be rules of evidence and it's going to be, you know, protections for me as the accused or whatever, but it's not a criminal court and it's not quite a civil court, but it works like a civil court. If you pay careful attention to what they're doing to you throughout this whole process, what it actually turns out that you're seeing is they are suing you for your child. And, you know, lawsuits, you don't get a jury for that. You know, a lawsuit is just the judge hears both sides and then goes with the one he thinks he agrees with.
But importantly, there's an important distinction to make here.
Yep.
Yes, the judge does get the evidence from both sides, but you're at a huge disadvantage because evidence can be presented against you, as we talked about already, ex parte, that you are not privy to. Things can be said about you, allegations can be made about you that you are not told about. Therefore, you don't get a chance. Yeah, and this is absolutely horrendous.
On top of that, this judge is a part of this whole money-making racket. He's not separate from this in any way. He's the family. He's not a judge they called over from another courtroom, come handle the family court today. This is what he does. He does these cases. He is a part of this system, not, you know, some third party. And then on top of that, the Hitler thing, every attorney I've spoken to told me that it's very obvious what happened. You were dismissed. You walked out of that courtroom. He started yelling at the CPS lady. And then he finally looked at him after you left and said, now look here, we've already taken this guy's kid. We've already snatched this guy's kid away from him. You did so without a warrant. You did so without even searching his house. And then when I asked you on the record why you did it, you gave me an answer that is not an acceptable answer.
Uncooperative.
So at this point, he's got a slam dunk lawsuit against you, against this office of CPS, against this county, possibly against the city, and against DHS federally. I mean, this man is going to be a 100 millionaire. No problem. You took his kid. What's the price on a kid? Whatever I say it is, that's my kid. My kid is priceless. So they immediately realized, you know, just like they had before, we jumped the gun here, and now that we've jumped the gun, we're in the hot seat. He can sue us into oblivion. Come up with something right now. And so he screamed something about Hitler is great. Now, this is the part that bothered me. The judge just bought this. He did have a piece of paper in his hand that he was waving around when he was yelling about, you know, as if to suggest that the paper he's waving in his hand
is the evidence,
the report.
Right.
It's a blank piece of paper, man. I'm not blind. I can plainly see it. You're flapping it back and forth so I can see both sides of it. I think it's completely blank. And it was later revealed to me that there was no report at all. Nothing came from the school. The closest I could get to an actual explanation of where that came from was somebody said something about it maybe happened.
Right.
That was what the guardian ad litem told me about 2 months later. And he said it in a way that was, you know, so I don't know, man. The way that happened, somebody said something might have happened. Why are you worried about that? Why don't you focus on what the judge is telling you to do now? I'm like, because this is a big game, obviously, and I don't want to play. So, yeah, I'm going to call you on your nonsense. I'm going to call all of you out. You said that you kept my child because I was a Nazi and I'm yelling Hitler. I went up and I got a statement from the sheriff's department signed by the sheriff stating that there is absolutely no record of anything like this ever happening at any school in the county, much less bearing my name. And furthermore, at the bottom of the on a separate piece of paper, he said, and furthermore, if this had happened, there's no way this story would have ended with, and he was escorted off campus.
No, of course.
The story would have absolutely ended with him going to jail.
Andy, we've got about 5 or 6 minutes left today, because I think there's no doubt we'll follow this one up. So I want, not to rush you, but in the next 5 or 6 minutes, yeah, just a couple of quick questions for you. You're obviously going to bring us up to speed as to what the situation is now. I know there's a GoFundMe campaign, and I'm happy to put links out there. I need you to send me another link. The link you sent me doesn't go straight to your campaign, but I'm going to put links out to it. First of all, Belle's mom must be horrified at this development. I mean, this is not a good result for Belle's mom, even if she doesn't like you anymore. How does she feel about this?
No, she thought it was hilarious. She called me up and told me, well, you must be a horrible dad. Look, they took her from you. I'm like, yeah, you called them 20-something times. Come on, man. You know, yeah, you sick them on me enough, they're probably going to eventually do one of two things, either tell you to stop calling or decide, well, there must be a problem. Which one happened? Yeah. And she thought it was great. She thought this was hilarious. She called 3 or 4 times, rubbed it in my face, and I finally blocked her number for the entire rest of the whole proceedings.
And is she in any way attempting to get access to Belle? Has she tried?
She has her now. That was their solution.
She has her now.
They didn't find anything on me. And over the course of this whole thing, and they accused me of everything under the sun. It was every time I came in there, it was something new, something different. Never, whatever they accused me of last month, we're not talking about that anymore. Now it's something new. And their eventual conclusion every time was, well, in light of these new accusations, we're going to need to hold this child another month to investigate. I'd go, oh, my God, really? And then next month, we'd show back up, and whatever it was last time that we had to investigate, not one word about it. But, hey, here's a new thing. You know, he's a Nazi. He's a zombie. Yes, I'm not joking about that one. We spent an entire day in court discussing whether or not I was indeed a zombie, the undead. You know, he moved 3 times within 4 years. Yeah, so what do you want that matter?
You go where the work is. You go where the work is. And are you telling me that the result of all of this is that Belle's mother eventually got custody of her?
Well, she doesn't have custody. Family court has no authority to grant custody in a legal sense. But what they did was they didn't want to give her back to me, because if they give her back to me, this lawsuit has just gotten worse over the past 5 months. Yeah. I mean, they've drugged me through everything. They've accused me of everything under the sun. Belle was physically beaten repeatedly at the foster home they had her in, and I have her recorded telling the CPS woman that, and the CPS woman on recording telling me how she doesn't really care. So, I mean, at this point, this lawsuit is way more than it was. I'm going to break the whole state before this is over. So they absolutely could not give her back to me.
Because they're giving her back to you.
Hail Mary.
Yeah, because
they called her mother.
So they called her mom and sent her back to live with her mother. When was this?
June 5th of last year.
And at that point, did anybody speak to you about visitation?
No. Nope. The judge doesn't have that authority. He doesn't have authority to grant custody any more than he has authority to dictate how any kind of custody would work. He had no authority to do this at all. Her mother doesn't live in this state. If this state CPS takes a child, their only option is to return that child to someone in this state. They have no authority, no jurisdiction to send a child across state lines.
So why did they do that? Why did they send her back? Well, look, you've answered that. You've said that. Obviously, you feel that they're very worried about their liability.
Oh, no, it wasn't me saying that. This is my, I've gone through four or five attorneys so far.
That you have
five,
a case,
if you count
yeah,
the one
yeah.
that didn't do anything, but four attorneys that actually did some work for me, and all of them agreed. Yeah, no, they couldn't give her back. If they give her back, then you can go to court and say, hey, they kept my child for 5 months, and all these horrible things happened, and then they just gave her back. Why did they have her? And they're not going to be able to answer that. They couldn't even answer it when they had her. All they could say was, we believe she is abused or neglected. That was it. No details could ever be given.
With no evidence. With no evidence proffered. So,
nothing.
Andy, what do you... What legal remedies are left open for you? I'm dreadfully sorry that you've gone through this. I really am, Andy. I've spoken to so many people who've gone through it. It's illogical for most people when they hear this. They can't understand how things like this can happen. No evidence whatsoever. And a man loses custody of his daughter. What are you going to do about it?
Well, good Lord, I've got a couple of different avenues in front of me. All of them are time consuming. All of them are unbelievably expensive, you know, on purpose. This is set up in a way, they go after people that are on the poorer end of things, and they go after them specifically because they know that your recourse is so expensive that people, you know, three or four financial tiers higher than me can't even afford to do that. I'm talking, $30,000 to $50,000 to get started. I mean, most people can't come up with that.
No.
In the middle of something like, and especially after they've drugged you through court, you had to hire attorneys for that. You had to take all their evaluations and tests. Those all cost. I mean, they had me broke before they even finished with me. And then I have to try to start this whole process. And I have. I can appeal the judge's decision. That would be a huge one, is to appeal the piece of paperwork that the judge gave Belle's mom when she handed her off to her. Because he did a very dirty little trick there that all of my attorneys said they knew he was going to do, but there's no way to stop him. So, you know, they just waited on him to do it, and then they explained to me what it meant. Like I said, he has no authority to grant custody. But what he wrote, so he just handed Belle to her mother, just physically, here she is. But he wrote in the court order that he is placing her in the care and custody of her mother. Now, any judge or lawyer would take one look at that and say, well, he means physical custody. That's what he means, because he doesn't have any authority to grant legal custody. So he means physical custody. But if he hadn't put that,
then I could hop in my car tomorrow, drive up to where they live, and I could pick Belle up from school because I am her father and I would have a driver's license to prove that. I'm on her birth certificate. So I could pick her up from school, nothing anybody could do to stop me, and I could drive wherever I wanted to her, to with her, because Daylene does not have legal custody, and I could just do this. But he wrote in there on purpose to prevent me from doing that, care and custody, because a cop would look at that and go, yeah, I don't understand all this stuff. I don't know what this means, but it says custody right here. So she's hers until you go and get it straightened out by another judge. So the first thing I need to do is get that thrown out.
Do me a favor, Andy. Do me a favor.
Yes.
Andy's Twitter, he tweets under the name of Rod Rescue Man. So it's at Rod Rescue Man. That's R-E-S-C-U-E-M-A-N. At Rod Rescue Man. That's Andy. Okay, that's Andy Chambers. Pin to your Twitter page the GoFundMe link so that I can tweet it and get my listeners retweeting it, because I know the story is there, and the donation options are there for people as well. It's a horrendous story. It's obvious to me that you've been stitched up, as we say here in the UK. You've been stitched up by a very, you know, I would say a very corrupt family court judge, you know, and a corrupt child protective service system. It's a dreadful thing, Andy. I don't know what to say to you.
I've been at quite the loss for words myself for a while. I mean, yeah, now you've heard the beginning, and you've heard where it started to get crazy. You hadn't gotten to the juicy bits yet. It got way worse before the end.
Do me a favor, Andy. Come back on the program and talk about it again with me.
I absolutely will.
Let's do that, right? Let's say end of part one for the moment. I really appreciate you coming on and talking to me. Thanks for providing me with information this morning that, you know, that made it easy for me to corroborate what you've been telling me. I believe you've been telling me the truth. I think it's horrendous. I've heard so many stories like this in the UK. It's dreadful. It is an industry, as you've said. The children are commodities. I don't know what else to say. Get us the GoFundMe link so that we can tweet it out there. And let's get you back on the program. Yeah, let's get you back on the program in the very early autumn or fall, as you will say there, to follow up on this with you. And thanks for telling us that story today, Andy. People need to hear it.
Yes, they do. Because it's not, like I said, it's not just me. There's 440,000
nearly half a million
right now. That's a lot of hurting children and a lot of hurting parents. And there's a good possibility some of them are orphans, and there's a good possibility some of them are actually abused. But I would bet every paycheck I'm going to get for the next year, not even half of them.
Andy, thanks. Come back again.
Yes, sir.
Thanks a lot. That was Andy Chambers there, live on the line from Vicksburg in Mississippi, telling us about his daughter, Belle, and how he came to be separated from her back in early 2000. And 18. And I want to reiterate that Andy made available to me today documentation that corroborated the most important parts, the most important points that he was making there. Nobody ever filed any complaints. And he had a sworn statement from his local sheriff's department that nobody ever filed any complaints about escorting a man off of a school premises because he was running around screaming, waving his arms, shouting that he liked Hitler and that he was a Nazi. Right, there you are. And thanks again to my listeners who are interested in this subject, because it's huge, for getting in touch with me and letting me know, or putting Andy on to me to get in touch with me so that he could come on the program and tell that story. And he continues to examine and look at all legal means, legal remedies, as to how he might get access to visit with his daughter again, whom he's not abused, whom he's not neglected, whom he's not put in harm's way in any way at all, and yet he doesn't get to spend any time with her. It's exactly 14 minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show, live on Fab Radio 2, triggerwarning.tv and TuneIn Radio. We're a couple of minutes late, we're a couple of minutes over. Dean Henderson is standing by in the Ozarks in Missouri. extraordinary guy. Dean's got a brand new book out, and I've been reading it over the last few days. It is terrific work. It really is. And we're going to talk about it and the motivation for writing it with Dean Henderson in about 2 minutes' time. All right? All right. Right. Here's music from Elvis Presley in the meantime. Dug it out. The King of Rock and Roll on the Richie Allen Show. Elvis Presley and the Wonder of You. The time is 17 minutes past the hour. We're a little bit late running over. But if we need any extra time, we'll hang on. You know my next guest very well because he's a fantastic writer. He's got a rare gift, he does. There's no doubt about that. He's a political analyst, a geopolitical commentator. You often see him on Press TV, RT, Channel 1 in Russia, Rents Radio, DavidIke.com. He's been on with me for many years now, and you can read him at hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. And his books have been hugely important in my own development in terms of my thinking about the world and how the world is run, who it's run by, and what the implications are for people, ultimately. Let's welcome him back to the programme. Live from the Ozarks in Missouri, it's our great friend Dean Henderson, and he's got a brand new book out, and we're going to talk about that. Dean, welcome back to the programme. I hope you and Jill are well, my friend.
Yeah, hey, thanks, Richie, for having me. We're doing great, and I hope you and the future Mrs. Allen are also doing good over there.
We're doing very well. I wouldn't imagine you heard any of my last guests, because you're pretty busy there, I would imagine, talking about CPS and how CPS is an industry, it's a private corporation that takes children from parents who don't deserve it, and the children are worth lots of money, they're a commodity. I'm guessing it's that sort of sickening reality that motivates you to write books to begin with, not just that issue, but your brand new book is Nephilim Crown 5G Apocalypse. Go to hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com to purchase it. I'm endorsing it, folks. I endorse very little, as you know. Nephilim Crown 5G Apocalypse. Dean, give us a brief synopsis of the book. I have gotten about two-thirds of the way through. It is excellent, my friend. Why have you written it? Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, thanks, Richie, for that. Yeah, I mean, it's just we're getting to this time where we really don't have time anymore. And if people don't begin to understand what's going on, it's going to be too late. So I tried to make the title as succinct as I could be with this book. So Nephilim Crown, you know, people have called them, it's on the first page of the Bible. They call the Nephilim the fallen angels, the Rephaim sometimes in the Bible, similar things. You know, David Icke calls them the Archons now. Sitchin calls them the Anunnaki. The Muslims call them Jinn. The Apache call them Witiko. The Cree call them Wendigos, which means cannibals. They've been called giants. They've been called titans. These are the interveners upon humanity in Sumeria roughly 8,000 years ago. It's all written down in the Sumerian clay tablets. It's the reason all the researchers have been banned from Iraq because of the war. They were getting too close. They looted the museum. People that looted the museum were Alpha Bank executives, the Russian mafia that works for the city of London. And that's who Trump actually does have ties to, not Putin. And they looted that museum, and they're concealing this history. it goes on from there. It goes to Babylon, where the Sanhedrin Jews were banished to Babylon, but they liked it, and the Pharisees liked it. Of course, they did. So they got in the game, and they developed the whole notion of spirituality and religion, which are enslaving philosophies, because it's all about right action. That's all it is in this world. And that's what Jesus represented as a metaphor, and so have many other figures, Crazy Horse, Martin Luther King, many, many other figures in this world have represented the exact same thing. So these families went on to become the pharaohs of Egypt. They had stops in Tyre and Carthage. They topped off the pyramids, which were probably actually built by the Moor, black culture. The Israelites were black. Jesus probably had an afro. They were run out of Jerusalem by the Nephilim. And the people that are now in Israel are not the Israelites. their Khazarian mafia headed by the Rothschilds, because the same Sanhedrin that went to Babylon then went up to Central Asia and converted the Rothschilds and some of these people to Judaism. So these people went from Egypt, they crossed over to Rome. By now they had a navy, the Knights Templar. They went around the world, they looted and enslaved black people, brown people, and Indians all over the world, stole all their gold and diamonds and so forth, and assigned it wealth, and that was the basis of the Holy Roman Empire. I believe they burned the library at Alexandria, Egypt, behind them to hide their bloody history and to hide the names, because every about 300 years, these families have to change their names, these hybrids. But these are the ennobled royal bloodlines. These are the blue bloods. Their blood is a different color. It really is. It's more purple. That's why royal color is purple. That's why Soros' purple revolution in America is what's going on right now, to divide and divide the shit out of America and just destroy any kind of getting along or civility or anything. And they're ennobled, and they call it. And these families include the Merovingians, the Habsburgs, the Algobrandinis, who are sort of the controllers of the papacy, have been. The Pacers, the Sinclairs or St. Clairs, the Bourbons, the Anjous, the Cavendish, Pallavicinis, Odescalis, Guiscardinis, Plantagenets, now the Tudors, Orsinis, Windsor, Spencer, Rollo. And there's some Asian families like the Lee family in China, which controls the triads, works for the CIA and British intelligence to do the opium wars, and I'm sure is involved with these protests in Hong Kong right now. You have the Khan family, which is Genghis Khan. No coincidence that the Venetian bankers used Genghis Khan's mercenaries to fight against both the Vatican and Constantinople, or what is now Turkey. Also, you have the Aga Khan Foundation, which funds all the Islamists in the world, which is a crown agent corporation owned by Aga Khan. And every Indian president has been a Khan bloodline. Every American president has been Plantagenet bloodline. You have the Singh family, which means all Sikhs are part of this. You have the Yamamoto family. Nothing against Sikhs here. You don't have to take part, but it's just one of the families. You have the Yamamoto family in Japan, which is the Japanese emperors. But pretty much everywhere you find a king or a queen, you will find these hybrid bloodlines. And they are indeed the ones behind the 5G. Thus, I think the main reason I wrote this book is to connect the crown, the Nephilim crown, with 5G. Because it's such a draconian program. You have this battlefield weapon. People say, oh, it hasn't been tested. Oh, it's been tested, all right. It's been well tested by these folks. And it is being combined with the chemtrailing, with the vaccination increases, with the glyphosates in our food, as a kill program, as a way to actually physiologically change our DNA, and to turn us into AI, which is pretty much the equivalent of the Nephilim, because these creatures, they're heartless. They don't have a heart. They don't even believe in it. They don't believe they have a soul. They're very steely. They're very good at math and numbers and symbology. And it is the lizard brain thing. And this is what computers are. And this is what computers and contact with computers are turning humans into. We already weren't going that way ever since our enslavement, but now it's accelerated because the delivery system is much more efficient with computers.
That answers the question. Let me jump in. That answers the question I was going to ask. Dean Henderson is our guest. Nephilim Crown 5G Apocalypse is the book. You believe the Nephilim. Now I've been reading the book. It's compelling. It's fascinating. It's horrifying. It reads like, I certainly wouldn't want to offend you or give you the wrong impression. It reads like a masterpiece of fiction. I'm not saying it is fiction. It resonates with me, the book. It really does. And I'm definitely moved and swayed by the arguments you're making in it. But it's a masterpiece, how you connect this stuff. You believe, now remember, you're talking to a guy who is an atheist. I've said this to you before. I've grown up thinking that, you know, I grew up in a Catholic family and I rejected all of that, didn't like it, wouldn't consider myself to be a Christian and all of that, but we can park that to one side. You believe that 1,000 years ago, just a little bit longer than 1,000 years ago, human experience on planet Earth was vastly different. It was more of a utopian existence. And then in come What arrives then is what some people call, I think you've referred to as fallen angels, a race, beings who want to alter and transform this reality and our existence 1,000 years ago, right? Or thereabouts.
Yeah, that's right. And really, you can go back 8,000 years if you lived in the Middle East. You know, if you lived in Europe, you can go back, you know, a couple thousand years. If you're a Native American, you only got, you know, if you were Lakota in the middle of the North American continent, you only came in contact with this Wetiko disease 300 years ago. So it depends where you were living. But I have the luxury of having grown up in South Dakota next to the Lakota, and I learned pretty much everything I know about reality from them. And I was lucky, you know, because of all the native tribes in the world, I'd have to say the Lakota thinking was the most pure that I've come in contact with. And probably that's why, because the contact with the Wetiko cannibals was later. And yes, exactly. It doesn't matter what anyone believes. Okay. Like, if you know, I have none of my business what anyone believes. And I'm not a fundamentalist Christian by any stretch of the imagination. I'm kind of a Jesus freak socialist. Okay. I mean, I think Jesus was a good example. That's all. And everything they've done with Christianity has been bastardized, infiltrated. And that goes for all the religions. And that goes for all spirituality.
Can I pick you up on that, Dean? Can I pick you up on that? Because this is really, because I genuinely have read the book. I know you will meet interviewers who will say, oh, the book is brilliant, Dean. And they've not read it. But sycophancy doesn't exist here, not between me and you. The book is terrific, mate. You believe that what we understand today to be scholars, theologians, they're actually gatekeepers, you believe. They exist to prevent people like me understanding that the answers are in the Bible. Is that right?
Yeah, I think the Bible is a history book, and it's definitely infiltrated, and there's a lot of disinformation in there. But I think there's some valuable information as well. And I actually think the Old Testament is probably the more accurate of the two. That's why we're taught that it's stodgy and it's brutal and all this. Well, it is brutal because it's telling the history of the Nephilim on this earth before the great flood intervention. So, you know, again, it doesn't really matter if people are, you know, I don't want people to get hung up on words or Nephilim. You just think about it as AI. That's fine if you're an atheist. But the important thing to know is that these people, you know, the Freemasons are the foremost biblical scholars in the world. And there's a reason for that. And they are very religious, and they are fundamentalists. I would call them fundamentalist Scientologists, I guess you could call them. But they're very fundamentally religious, and they're madmen about it. I mean, the science is the new religion, and it all goes back to these seven sacred sciences, which were taught to them apparently by the Nephilim or by evil people way back when in Babylon anyway. Rhetoric, logic, grammar, astronomy, mathematics, geometry, and music. So if you think about those seven things and how, like, take music, for example. I mean, you can listen to the Rolling Stones and you're pretty much being exposed to Satanism. Or you can listen to The Who and you're listening to liberating music that is against it. And it's just like that. And the same with all these things. So the Royal Society pretty much administers the seven sacred sciences nowadays, whether it's the Royal Astronomy Society or the Royal Society of Physics or the National Geographic Society, in the case of archaeology and anthropology, and they give us the official story on what happened. For example, the Big Bang Theory, 6.5 billion years ago, can never be proven. They know it. It's bullshit. The theory of evolution, it's a theory. Ramapithecus was as close as they got. I studied plenty of anthropology in college. Never got really close, so it's still a theory, but it's preached like it's scientific fact. And so is the Big Bang Theory. And these things basically bolster the chaos, this history of bloody chaos that keeps humanity in the dark as to the fact that there is actually a creator. Things do actually fit together. There's symbiosis everywhere you look. Lakota call it the good red road to stay on, just right action. You have to get in sync with nature and the beauty of nature. And what they've taught us, and now it's just been ingrained in people, is that there's this chaos everywhere. Nothing makes sense. Don't connect the dots. Nothing to see here. See, and it's all by design, and it's part of their schisming of the soul, of the mind. And this is what they believe in, because Lucifer, the fallen angel, the Nephilim, was the most cunning of those fallen angels. And they literally are fundamentalist Luciferians, no matter if we believe in Christianity, if we believe in animism, if we believe in whatever. This is what they believe in, and it's through this that all the science comes through Chatham House and the Royal Institute of International Affairs. And this is basically underneath of the crown. But see, just under the crown, there's a committee of 33, according to Gary Wayne. According to John Coleman, Expedition Intelligence, then there's a committee of 300. These are all bloodlines. These are all people that have to have the blue blood. Below that, you have the Priory of Zion. You have the Royal Geographic Society, the Royal Society, which runs all of those things I just said. Below that, including the BBC, below that you have the Freemasons, the Muslim Brotherhood, the Kabbalists, and the Illuminati, which basically are just out there to do politics, media, banking, and propaganda. And then you have the Knights Hospitality, you have the Knights of Malta, which are the big Vatican infiltrators. A lot of people say it's the Jesuits, but that's because they're right-wing fanatics and they want to believe that. I think it's the Knights of Malta. It has been all along. I know it is. The Jesuits are demonized because they're radicals. They support revolution. They support liberation. They're Society of Jesus. Maybe they're the only part of the Catholic Church that's not been corrupted. And this is probably why we have the first Jesuit Pope we've ever had. And I actually think he's a good guy. And I think he's there at the right time. The first thing he did was he decapitated the Knights of Malta when he came in, and then he raided the Vatican Bank, which, yes, has been infiltrated and controlled by the crown for eons. So this is kind of the power structure of how it works. And, you know, they control CERN. They control, you know, it's no fiction that DARPA created LifeLog, which the same day it shut down Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg came on TV and announced the start of Facebook. It's no fiction that Mark Zuckerberg's biggest funder was the CIA's venture capital group. You know, what do they call it?
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, the wing of the CIA. Yeah. That's right. That speculates that and funds these projects. I know exactly.
InQtel. It's InQtel.
That's the one.
InQtel surprised. And also, InQtel the next year gave the bulk of the funding. That very year, NBNK gave most of the funding. That's Wilbur Ross's corporation that he founded with the CEOs of Lloyds Bank. A lot of just all the British huge banks in the City of London, all these guys were Knights of the Order of the British Empire, and they founded this NBNK. And again, as soon as Facebook started up, this corporation, NBNK, just shut down. And this is all in the book. So DARPA was funding the Stanford Research Institute, which also produced Ted Shackley and the Iran-Contra people and a lot of CIA shenanigans. But Stanford Research Institute was where Google came out of. And in there, when the two guys that founded Google, you know, their names aren't even important, came out and thanked people, the first thing they thanked was DARPA for their funding. So Stanford Research Institute literally became Silicon Valley. And what I'm saying in this book is that the entirety of Silicon Valley is controlled by the U.S. military. And it was done because basically after World War II, they had to increase their signals intelligence capabilities. So then who's pushing the Pentagon? And then when you start looking at who's pushing the agenda and who's actually funding the startups, the venture capital firms, then you'll find people like the head of the Federal Reserve Bank in New York, which is funding all of the Bitcoin related stuff, digital media. It's called Digital Media Inc. It's called. And he also is he's on the Federal Reserve Board in New York. And you find, you know, CERN is basically funded by Italian knights of the papacy, you know, again, these black nobility who aren't current crown, you know, current crown being the kings and queens of Europe. But there's also the black nobility, which are former crown, like the Savoy family in Italy, which was, you know, officially anyway, taken out of power after they funded Mussolini. And like the von Turnentaxis family, which was officially taken out of power when Germany got rid of its monarchy. But they're still very powerful. And the same with the papal princes of the Holy Roman Empire. And, you know, so the Holy Roman Empire has now moved to the City of London, and it's been there ever since. And the whole myth, one of the big myths, of course, and there are many, is that, these empires somehow die and go away. Like, oh, the Roman Empire died. Look what happened to it with its corruption. Oh, you know, the British Empire died. Well, then why does the Queen still give out, Knight of the Order of the British Empire to people, which she's still doing? Why does she still do that if the British Empire doesn't exist? So it exists. And, you know, Trump and Clinton and Boris Johnson and all these other crazy people, that run countries are just taking orders from these guys. And we're seeing this with the recent Epstein family, where they're trying to protect Ghislaine Maxwell. Because why? Because she's the crown agent. She's the MI6, just like daddy. And they're trying to keep her out of it. But this thing goes way up. And yeah, this is a story you had before, and I was listening. And this guy gets his kid taken. This is the start of the pedophile rings. This is how they do it. They do it through foster homes. They do it through, oh, you're not a good parent. We're going to take your kid. You got to pay for it. We're going to steal your kid, because they're cannibals. I mean, these people are literally cannibals. They cannibalize your mind. They cannibalize your kids. They cannibalize your soul. And
whatever you want to call them,
the dark force.
Did you know that 500,000 children are in the foster care system in the U.S.?
Yeah, say that. Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. Me. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know there are nearly 300 million people living in America. There are 60 plus million people living here. It's still staggering to hear that. Let me just remind our listeners, Dean Henderson is live on the line from Missouri. His new book, folks, I'm recommending that you get online and buy it, Nephilim Crown 5G Apocalypse, hendersonftook.wordpress.com, about two-thirds of the way through it even. It's an incredible read, because Dean alleges, and I'm going to be fair, you know, and say, look, I have a lot of sympathy with Dean's position. I have a lot of time for the things he's talking about here, but I'm going to detach myself just for a minute to be fair, and say that Dean alleges, and we came in on this, that the human experience is transformed over 1,000 years ago. Dean believes that there really is a battle between good. It's an ancient battle between good and evil. And we're living it right now. And non-human entities have basically enslaved and abused and attempted to genocide us on Earth. That a lot of clues to this are in the Bible. But gatekeepers, alleged scholars, Dean mentioned Freemasons, are there as gatekeepers to prevent people from really understanding the truth about who we are and how we got to this point. And he connects this with bloodlines, with the wealthy families of the world, the royal families of Europe and beyond, how these people came together, how bloodlines are hugely important to these people, and how they vicariously control pretty much every aspect of human existence, no matter what it is, whether it's the media, whether it's sports, whether it's family life, whether it's entertainment, whatever. It's really fascinating. There will be some people listening to this and they will think this is madness. And I respect people's rights to think what they want. They think, oh, this is crazy. It couldn't possibly be happening. But Dean makes a very compelling case for it in the book. He makes a very compelling case for it. And I recommend that you read the book. It's brilliantly written. It's not hard going. It's not heavy stuff. It's depressing at times reading it. It's exhilarating at other times. There are a lot of times when you read it and you go, oh yeah, oh, I didn't realise that these people were connected. But check it out. Let me read something from it. Let me read something. This is fascinating. It's an excerpt from chapter 13. Dean Henderson's new book. Very soon, no amount of alcohol, Facebook, prescription drugs or shopping will be able to hide the Nephilim Crown's long-planned assimilation extermination plan for humanity. Their TV mind control tool is full of tales of nice dragons, unicorns, vampires, zombies and cannibalism. Just look at Netflix, Dean, you could say. Dean writes, their social engineering DARPANET platforms continue to encourage separatism, narcissism and identity politics division among the human race. Luciferian religious fundamentalism is becoming the new normal. And then you want to talk about a man called Steve Quayle and the antediluvian giants of the Book of Enoch. And you say, the Vatican has set up a powerful south-facing telescope in Arizona, which it calls Lucifer, at a time when even NASA is admitting the possibility that Planet X or Nibiru may be approaching the South Pole. What's that about, Dean? That's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, well, it's true. There is this telescope called Lucifer, and there's this Planet X is where Sitchin and where the Sumerian clay tablets anyway outline this planet, say that this is the planet, tell the whole story of it, how, you know, this is where the Anunnaki came from. And they were coming here to mine gold because their planet had a problem with its atmosphere and it needed to get, you know, basically patched up, like the ozone needed patching up with gold flecking. And so the implication there is, and this is some of what Michael Tellinger gets into, because Southern Africa it's the hub of gold mining. I mean, it just is. And so there was all these circle formations that he found down there that he believes were actually, you know, maybe even beaming the gold up somehow with this energy, these free energy cylinders. But whatever the case, they enslaved humanity to mine gold. And they did the breeding project. See, there's two different stories in the book of Genesis, and it's very interesting. And again, yeah, the Bible's just another book. You got to read it discerningly, but you can't just throw it out either. It's a book. It's a history book. And you can't throw history books out just because, you know, they bother your sensibilities. Maybe their sensibilities aren't the right ones. I mean, you know, maybe you got some other bad information along the way. I know I did because I grew up Roman Catholic. I threw it all out. I learned from Lakota. I didn't want nothing to do with the Bible. But then you come around and you go, wait a minute, this is some there's some stuff in here. It's pretty interesting. So there's two stories. One of them is the Genesis 6 story where, you know, this is the story of how men and women actually came in together. There's a bunch of us. We didn't come in until day 6. You know, the sun, the moon, the stars, everything was created first, the trees, the plants, the animals, so that we'd have this place to live. And we were portrayed in that story in the Bible as hunters and gatherers, clearly. Now, the other one is a Garden of Eden story where we're portrayed as agrarians and where Adam and Eve fell. And I think both stories are true. And the Adam and Eve story is a story of the Anunnaki or Nephilim intervention, because Eve was impregnated, I believe, with the serpent. I believe that's where the Abel and Cain bloodlines come from. Abel representing true humans, Cain representing Nephilim hybrids. Everyone knows throughout history, not just from the Bible, the Cain bloodline is horrible. And, you know, just murderers. And the tribe of Dan was related to them, and on and on. So this story is about the tree of knowledge, which if you look at Apple computer and the bite out of the apple and the logo, that's what that represents. They're telling you they're the new gods. You know, they're fundamentalists. They are the new gods. You know, they don't believe in creator. They don't believe in any order to universe. They believe computers are from God and trees are just to be cut down and deforested, I guess. Indians are just savages and we are so refined and we are, you know, we are so sophisticated, which comes from the word sophist, which means to hide behind falsity. See, I'm really into etymology lately, the meaning of words. You get on a search engine, you're searching. Well, that's kind of weird because if you go for a book, you just kind of look for something, you find something, you keep it kind of, you know, that kind of language. But on a search engine, no, it's almost like a spiritual journey or something. So every time you get on Google, are you in fact being initiated to a secret society? And then is Google in fact communicating with its quantum computing with CERN, which you know, David Icke and others say is plugged in to Saturn, getting signals from Saturn. You got the Promise software, which was highly, in fact, the guy that created the Promise software was, his name was Stephen Hedron Collider.
Yeah, Hedron, yeah.
And so they're beaming to Saturn, they're getting a signal back. So is that the signal you're getting when you Google search something? So in other words, every time you go on Google, are you being fed it disinformation from the art gods or from this dimension? Because it just seems like people are getting dumber the more they're on computers. They're dumber. They're outraged all the time. They're not happy. You know, it's just a gut feeling that person has. And then you go out, and then you go find the facts. You know, Serco is run by two British knights, Hospitality, Sir Roy Gardner, you know, and Sir Rupert Soames, who's Winston Churchill's grandson. And he was awarded officer of the Order of the British Empire in 2010, which, of course, doesn't exist. British Empire, we all know it doesn't exist. I mean, it's all right there. It's just we've been taught not to look at it. These are facts. You know, I don't deal in fiction. I don't deal in stuff that I don't have facts about. I don't want to get sued for one thing. And so far I haven't been. That's because I deal in facts. And this is just all right there in front of us. The problem is people have been conditioned with etymology, the sacred science of rhetoric. That's their big one right now. And they're using it to deceive people. They're literally changing the meanings of words. They're inverting the meanings of parties. Like, what is the Democrats now? Is that a left? No, not anymore. I mean, they're inverting the meaning of everything, and they're changing the order. And this is the sacred science of rhetoric that they're using to manipulate people right now.
And telling people that their classic or their classical understanding of things is wrong. And some people use the term gaslighting to describe this. It's almost like a real mind. It's mind bending or mind screwing. They're screwing with your mind. All the things that we understood to be absolutely true are being turned sideways and upside down, whether it's sexuality, you know, gender identity, whatever. You make a good point there, and you also make an excellent point about the more you use the internet to... and we were told that the internet would herald in a new age of enlightenment. I remember 25 years ago. I remember it when they said it would usher in a new era of enlightenment, knowledge at your bloody fingertips. But you make an excellent point in the book. You've made it here. The fact is, the opposite has happened. People are less enlightened. They are less knowledgeable. In fact, they know less now than they did before they ever got a hold of a computer. It's an excellent point you make. Excellent.
Yeah, and in fact, the Enlightenment itself was a crock of shit, and it wasn't an enlightenment at all. It brought us all these fake theories about particle physics, and you know, this is the new science, the real science that's coming out finally, is disproving the fact that, oh, there's all these little particles, and these little particles make up this and that. No, they don't. You get down to these smaller quarks and stuff, and they just disappear, and then it's light, energy, and electricity, because that's what it's all about. That's the nature of what we consist of. But again, it's this Luciferian, atomistic, colonialist mind. It's really down to colonialism. It's down to colonialism because they have to conquer tribes and conquer hunters and gatherers and conquer humanity through these lies. So part of that is again, atomizing us, studying us, putting us down as imbeciles if we don't think in this kind of neurotic way that they think. I mean, they're insane. And they've been insane for a long time. And, you know, whatever else you call it, just know that they're insane. I don't care if you call them Nephilim. I don't care if you call it just misguidedness or bad history or maybe their parents didn't love them. That doesn't really matter. But these people are insane. And so they're going around the world and they're spreading their insanity. In other words, the Wetiko is spreading. The disease is spreading. The disease of cannibalism is spreading. And to the point where now we're cannibalizing ourselves. And that's what they want. They want people that hate humanity to become cynical about humanity. Oh, there's no hope. Everybody's too stupid. We're all just... No, it's just because they believe the lie. And the only way they're going to get out of the lie is, yeah, basically, you got to rethink everything. You got to rethink all these things you've been told over the years.
Reevaluate everything. Before we talk about 5G itself, Dean Henderson is our guest, and he's written... I mean, Dean's books, The Four Horsemen... I've talked about these books for years. You know, they're brilliant reads. Phil Restino, who's a friend of mine in Florida, is listening to this with great interest. Phil is part of the 9/11 Truth Movement and the anti-war movement, and it's blowing his mind, but he's interested. I would say to Phil, because he's asked me about videos, introductory guides to what Dean is saying, but the book is so coherent, Phil, you know, about this subject. Dean takes you through it in the book. Step by step, even for a beginner. Like I said earlier on, the book is easy to read and understand, and that's very important. That's a gift, because too many people, even very learned people in the independent media, are not able to be succinct when they're putting this stuff together. But, you know, the book is again Nephilim Crown 5G Apocalypse, hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. Before we talk about 5G, and we will go over the time, I'm supposed to finish at 7. I say that, Dean. I laugh when I say that because I can do whatever the goddamn hell I want because it's my program and it's my bloody network. So we'll stay over. We'll stay over as long as we need to chat about this with your permission. That is, I mean, you might have things to do.
Oh, yes.
But this is important stuff, and I'm as always enjoying the conversation. Before we talk about 5G, again, you see, I read people like Dean Henderson because I learn things. Never heard of the Thunderbolt Project, never heard of David Talbot, never heard about cave paintings from thousands of years ago that would lean towards these cave paintings all over the world that would demonstrate that the world used to look very different at one time. Tell us about David Talbot, the Thunderbolt Project, the Electric Universe, and how the sky at one time looked different, because this is centrally important to what we're talking about.
Yeah, this is stuff I ran across, and they call themselves the Thunderbolt Project. If anyone wants to, you know, check out they got some really interesting videos and stuff. But this all harkens back to the Golden Age, they called it. And I'm, you know, the more I've learned about it, I think the Golden Age was not a good time. And that's probably why they call it the golden age, because they loved it and they love gold. But it just goes back to this idea that there was probably two suns at that time, and that Saturn was the best sun, or was the brightest sun, and that somehow Saturn got blasted out further and went away. And these guys are just saying, you know, their whole contention is that, you know, basically the universe didn't come about from a big bang, but that it's all about electricity and plasma, and it's ever changing. And most things that happen in the universe aren't based on these collisions of explosions or whatever, but they're just electricity is just constantly changing our universe. And and there are all these cave paintings where indigenous people would portray the sky in the very same way. Saturn seems to have been the primary sun, and then Venus was like a negatively charged comet in front of it, and Mars was like this fiery dragon, positively charged pupil. Because see, that's the other thing. There is no duality, okay, but there is polarity. And this is a big distinction. Because most of our misconceptions about reality have been based on the Luciferian Freemasonic notion of duality, and it doesn't exist. So, you know, that's why there's so much contention in the world, and it will be that way until we get over this false scientific fraud that says there's duality. But there is polarity. Things are positively and negatively charged, you know.
If we do get over it, and that's another question, and we'll end up finishing on that. So the universe was vastly different because it's not solid, according to Talbot and the Thunderbolt Project. Because of the evidence they have, it's not solid. Therefore, it is conceivable that the things in the universe can move around and can be in different places at different times. And this is really interesting to me. And let's not dwell on that, because it might go over the heads of some of our listeners. But in the book, this is all laid out in a way that makes it understandable, because Dean is connecting these events and these stories, right? I don't want to say stories like as if they're fiction, but these events together. So I'm kind of jumping around. Dean Henderson is our guest. Let's talk about 5G then, because what I've noticed is some of the more experienced researchers and some of the more credible ones, you know, the ones that, the more cerebral ones, the ones that are in the business of research and stuff, are in the job of researching these things, because they genuinely want to find out what's going on, because they want to put before people a different point of view. Some of the more experienced and more credible people, I found, are absolutely terrified of 5G. This is massive. I mean, things have happened in the last 25, 30 years, false flag terrorism, all sorts of weird and wonderful things happening geopolitically, negative things, bad things. You know, you and I talked about sexual politics, sexual liberation, women's lib, all that stuff in the past and where it came from. Brilliant stuff, really important that people understand that. But 5G, Dean, it's a game changer. It's possibly a game over game changer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And you know, a lot of people, of course, point out the surveillance implications of it, which are massive. I don't think any more time needs to be spent discussing that if people don't get that already. But I think the most significant problem is a problem that's already going on, which is this assimilation to AI. I mean, they're not going to have to replace us with computers, although they will to some extent, but they're trying to turn humans into AI, into computers, into cold, heartless beings that, you know, have bought into this Wetiko way of thinking, have bought into this corrupt, selfish, narcissistic, and it's nowhere, because you're not helping yourself. It's a low frequency behavior. They're actually adding, you know, with the chemtrails, they're actually making the atmosphere denser. They're making the gravitational pull heavier, and they're actually creating a lower frequency environment for people to live in already, with the space fence and with all this electricity. Because if we're all electric, as we were just talking about with Thunderbolts, and I think that's right, then what do you do to control humanity if they're all electric? Well, guess what? You change the electricity, you change the frequency. You shoot beams at them, which alter their frequencies, their natural human frequencies, and you replace them with, well, with whatever you want, because you can remote control them. I mean, they literally, it's an over the horizon thing. Nobody knows what's going on. They brag about it in their documents, how it's over the horizon, and it's so stealth. And so they do it, and they're, you know, Intel has this aggressive remote control chip is what they call it. And it's in every computer. And it's not just 5G, it's already happening. And this is why people are becoming drones, and the hive mind is developing apace. It's not going to take 5G to develop that. It's already here. Everyone thinks the same. Everyone talks the same. Everyone uses the same slang now. Doesn't matter if they're black, brown, men, women. I mean, it's just like anybody that spends a lot of time on a computer, you know they do. I mean, if you don't, you know they do. You step back and you go, wow, this is really affecting people. And so with 5G, yeah, it just ramps that up. It just accelerates it, and it gives them more widespread capability, and it gives them the use of higher frequencies, different frequencies, to the point where they are going to know, they probably know most people's DNA, most people's electricity, most people's polarity. They probably know your polarity. They probably know your electricity by now because of all the information you've given them on your NSA profile, also called Facebook profile or a Twitter profile or whatever it is. However you got hoodwinked. And by the way, I'm off Twitter now. I'm off everything. I don't do any of that anymore. I'm done. It's crazy. Everybody should get off there. You're nuts if you stay on Facebook or Twitter. You're completely insane, because these are intelligence operations, and they just are. But so anyway, you have the ability now to be remote controlled from your computer. Every Intel computer has it. Doesn't have to be a smartphone. Doesn't have to be necessarily the internet. Doesn't even have to be on.
Remote controlled. To the point that you can be induced to think something, do you think?
Yeah, maybe you can go gun down 20 people at a Walmart or something. Who knows, right? I mean, I found it very interesting that the word conspiracy theory was again, attacked, and we were called potential terrorists. Well, I wasn't, because I'm not a theorist. I just deal in facts. Sue me if you think any different. Go ahead.
Yeah.
You know, really, I'm not a theorist. I don't do theories. I mean, I do theories, but I don't write them as fact. If it's a theory, I tell you it's a theory. Okay, but so they're trying to, the FBI puts,
right, can
this
I jump out. In? Can I jump in there? Can I just jump in there very quickly? Because I've got to say this, because, and you know, I love you, my friend. I've all the time in the world for you, and I'm fascinated by the book, and I am open minded to the themes of the book, and I'm perfectly prepared to consider that. Your conclusions in the book may very well be real, because I'm open-minded. But when you say you deal in facts, I have to point out, otherwise I wouldn't be doing my job, there will be some listeners going, hang on a second, Dean, we're talking about the Nephilim, the transformation of humans and human experience 1,000 years ago, fallen angels, Planet X, don't say facts because you can't prove it. It's a very good theory backed up with some circumstantial evidence, and it's worth exploring. But don't say facts. That's what some of my listeners will say. I just had to throw that in there, my friend. And you know,
that's,
I love
fine.
You.
I would say to them that it is based on the extensive research of many people who I respect, including Sitchin, including David Icke,
yeah,
and including a lot of other people. I mean, hundreds of other people. So, you know, that's what I would say to them. It is based on fact. It's based on as plausible of a history as you're going to get. And that the mainstream media that you think you're a little smarty pants and you know all about is a lie. I'm going to tell you, like, next time, maybe you want to question that narrative. Maybe you want to ask them if they're a conspiracy theorist.
Absolutely.
Maybe you want to ask the people that brought you Russiagate what kind of conspiracy theorists they're going to bring you tomorrow.
Not to mention Salisbury.
You don't want to deal in that. I mean, that's the whole thing. So anyway, what I was saying, it's important, is that they basically come out and they discredit conspiracy theorists the day before El Paso happens and Dayton happens. Isn't that kind of interesting?
Very interesting.
Because what that's going to do is that's going to back people away from you. That's going to make them question your facts and think they're conspiracy theories. That's what it's designed to do. And then they equate, because people like Fetzer, you know, and Pulaski and different people have questioned Sandy Hook and have questioned all these, you know, New Zealand shootings, then they're going to be able to equate the conspiracy theorists in their little pea brain, remote controlled electronic feudalist mind that they've given over to the Nephilim, And they're going to say, oh, those conspiracy people, they're responsible for those shootings. Yeah.
Do you know what
happened, that's not a coincidence.
No, do you know what really pisses me off about the last 2 days? And this is important. I don't think anybody has picked up on this. We're told that Patrick Crusius dropped the manifesto 10 minutes before embarking on the shooting. And I'm not saying that didn't happen. But this morning, it was announced by El Paso police that they are convinced that he only popped into Walmart because he was tired, he was hungry, and he was lost. Now, this is a fact. This has been reported today. Why would a guy decide to arm himself with 250 bullets, a deadly semi-automatic weapon, decide I'm going to kill some people today, write a manifesto, but then get lost and hungry to the point that we're told today Walmart was chosen randomly because he was hungry and he pulled over? Dean, I wasn't born yesterday.
Yeah, exactly.
And
I caught the woman who wrote into you yesterday. I can't remember her name, and she had a friend die at Las Vegas. And, you know, it's just amazing how, you know, this person that listens to your show all the time knows you, knows about you, trusts you. And she would basically hang you out to dry, and it was really a mean, vicious thing she did there because you had nothing to do with that. But see, what happened is in her mind, because the day before the FBI came out and said, ooh, these conspiracy theorists are terrorists, her mind, she got scared and she ran from you and she hung you out to dry. And that's what's going to happen. You watch, your family's going to do it. Some of your friends are going to do it. And this is the pressure. They're ratcheting up. Why? Because the truth is coming out. The truth is coming out. Not the lies, not the theories, not the conjecture, not every brainwashed idea that you're being implanted with for 8,000 years, and so was your grandpa and your great-grandma, and, you know, they all got scared and put their heads down and said, we're not going to talk about this anymore because they'll cut our heads off, and they did. But you know what's good about it? It means we're getting to them. It's just part of the censorship. It's part of the going after the truth, and it's not right or left. It's the truth. You know, I know because my stuff's censored. You know, your stuff. And then they do it to the right. But it's not about right or left. That's just another smokescreen. It's about people telling the truth about history. And that's what I'm doing this book.
It's a fantastic book, Dean. It really is, mate. I don't get to read too much these days. Apart from when I'm kind of winding down, I'll take a bit of fiction. I do get books sent to me once in a blue moon by researchers, but not as much as I would like. But, you know, I've read all your books, and my word is solid. If you haven't read Dean's books before, check them out. He's a terrific writer. You know, it's a skill, this. You know, there are many learned folks, I said earlier on, and they're great and they're well-meaning, but they don't have the skills, and you get a kind of a mishmash of a book that's a scattergun approach. You know, it's not knitted together very well. Dean's a real writer, and this book is compelling. Whatever you think, you know, you might think, and some of our listeners will think, all of these things that Dean is talking about, they're right on. And I know some of you will conclude that the origin of all of this, you might conclude, you might take a different point of view, you might think it's coming from somewhere else. It's not coming from heaven or hell or interstellar, interdimensional beings. You might not agree with that. I used to think that stuff was crazy until I kind of smacked myself in the face and stopped being arrogant and said, right, well, have a look at this stuff. And I've had a look at it over the last few years, and I can no longer say that it's crazy, because it isn't. And I can no longer say that none of it makes sense to me, because it does. And that can be, you know, kind of a scary thing to come to terms with as well. It's an absolutely brilliant read, Dean. Folks, go to hendersonneftook.wordpress.com. Do yourself a favour and get a copy of Nephilim Crown 5G Apocalypse there. I'm going to give you the final word, mate. I think we've covered a bit. There's so much in the book, by the way, folks. There's so much in the book. So I'm going to give you the final word today. First of all, the best of luck with it. It's important that people like you do write these books in the way that you do. You are a rare gift, Dean. So I'll give you the final word, my friend. And thanks for the book. Thanks for giving me an advanced copy of it. And I hope it sells really well. And I hope that it furthers the discussion about these issues and broadens it out. Final word to you, Dean.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Rich. I really always enjoy talking with you. It is selling really well. And it's the weirdest thing about it is I've had These people, you know, I'm pretty isolated in a lot of ways here in the Ozarks. There's not a lot of people you can really have a discussion about this with, because they're scared, you know. And I've had so many, a handful of people reaching out to me just lately after writing this book, and they're some of the like smartest people you know I've ever met. And just right off the bat, calling me, like using the phone, not texting me, you know, whatever. Just the real deal. The reading, you know, they've read Gujarat. They've just done it all. And these are the people that, okay, once in a while traveling, you might meet a person this smart around the world. But you know what I mean? And so all of a sudden this is happening. So even though we're isolated right now, and that's the idea. They're trying to isolate us. They're trying to, you know, call us crazy. They're trying to get your mother to put a white coat on you. They'd love nothing better. In fact, Trump, one of the things yesterday he said in his thing about El Paso was, oh, we're going to change the mental health laws. I wonder what that means.
Yeah.
I wonder what that means. See, so you're going to be crazy. You're going to be easier to declare you crazy if you tell the truth. You know, that's the time we're living in. So the truth's been thrown under the bus. Anybody that tells the truth, they're crazy. We're the conspiracy theorists. Meanwhile, on the other side of it, everything the mainstream media says is all just conspiracy theories, conjecture, lies. But it's the official story. And so this is what feudalists do. They round up the herd of cattle. They put us in a pen. They use gatekeepers to keep us there. They use language to enslave us. They make us feel bad about ourselves, bad about humanity, and love technology and love so-called progress, which is nothing to do with progress. And so we're at a point now where we're gonna be isolated, but you're gonna have people come together to you, and there's gonna be people that are really aware are gonna start, you know, engaging from all over. And this is the awareness, and we're not gonna let it die. We're not gonna let it be crushed. We're not gonna get cynical. Our hearts are gonna stay open and loving. We're gonna be the way, the truth, and the light, the way hunting and gatherers, living simply, get out of the city, girl, garden, truth, challenge authority at every possible juncture, authority, not people who don't deserve to be challenged, like Richie was challenged yesterday. Not even challenged, but I thought it was just thrown under the bus. And not me, because I'm just trying. I don't have all the answers, but I'm just trying. The light, which is love, which is sympathy, which is empathy for the poor, which is what we need. So I just hopefully this book, you know, if people get a copy of it, you know, like again, it pretty much connects the Nephilim Crown to the 5G, to the rollout of AI. And it's just their most recent attempt. This is not new. It has to do with enslavement into agriculture, enslavement into industrial factories, the stealing of our land, the crushing of the native people. So you don't have an example of how to live. And this is all you know now. This is all you know, is this tech nightmare. And walk away from it, and walk away from the lure of it, because it's a temptation that will lead to enslavement. And so meanwhile, there's going to be people on the outside, and we'll become, you know, targets, and we'll be on the run maybe, and who knows what we'll be. But we will be the awareness, and we will not go away. And if we die, we'll still not go away. And that's reality. So thanks so much for having me, Richie. And just good luck with your new house. I know you got a new house. It's a lot of work. Believe me, I've had 7 or 8 new houses.
So you know.
So good luck with that. You know,
it never ends, does it? It never ends. Thanks for that. Folks, it's Nephilim Crown 5G Apocalypse. Go to hendersonfhook.wordpress.com. Buy the book, and keep great authors, researchers, and journalists like Dean going. But buy the book, because it's worth buying, full stop. And it's a read that I think you really need to have. Give Jill my regards, and ask Jill to come on the program soon for a chat with me. And Jill's work, of course, is excellent. And I'm not trying to sound all virtue signaler, I'm not a virtue signaler, but one of the things about this particular job is there aren't enough female voices. I'm going to sound now like I'm one of those virtue signalers who does positive discrimination. I don't, but we need a few more female voices on the show. And when Jill was on, she was outstanding. Ask her to come on, Dean. Good luck with the book. I don't think you'll need very much luck. And you and I'll be talking again within the next couple of months, of course. Enjoy the rest of the summer. Congratulations on the book, mate. It's brilliant. Thank you, Dean.
All right. I'll do it, and let's do it again. Sounds good, Rich. You have a great summer, too. Have a nice vacation.
Cheers, mate. Thanks for that. The brilliant Dean Anderson. Live on the Richie Allen Show from the Ozarks in Missouri, Nephilim Crown 5G Apocalypse is the book. hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. It's excellent. The man is excellent at putting together this information. You know, he reminds me of David Icke in that sense. He's really up there. He's on that level, putting it together in a narrative that you can understand and it makes sense. And it's not heavy going, you know, it's not hard going. And you're like, oh, Jesus, I can't make sense of this. It's not like that. It's excellent. Whether you agree with it or not, it's coherent. And I have a lot of time for the themes explored in this book and in Dean's other books. Check it out. That's it for the programme. A huge thanks to Andy Chambers for coming on and telling us his story earlier on. How do you even begin to speak to guys like Andy Chambers? What do you say to a man who's gone through that, that could ever give him any comfort or any, I don't know, any peace? Terrible story of injustice and having his daughter taken away from him by a corrupt family court system in Mississippi in the United States and an absolutely corrupt CPS system. Thanks to him for his courage. And I have tweeted, and I will again later on tweet out a link to the GoFundMe. And thanks as always to Dean Anderson, the Ozarks of Missouri, a rare breed of journalist and researcher. Nephilim Crown 5G Apocalypse. That's the book going out this week, or this day even, Tuesday with Iggy Pop, right? And The Passenger. I've been Richie Allen. Look after yourselves and one another. See you tomorrow morning for the papers. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Bye for now. HendersonLefthook.wordpress.com. Bye now.